We've been friends a long time. We can discuss anything, right?
Sure, bud.
Well, I have an issue.
No kidding. You cheer for Boston.
An issue down there?
Hey, half of all guys experience erectile dysfunction. Heard of Felix? Felix connects you to a doctor for an assessment. No appointment, no pharmacy visit, no awkward conversations. Treatment is delivered discreetly to your door.
Sounds great.
I just wish you'd be more discreet about wearing that Boston jersey in Toronto.
Go to felix.ca/drive to start your online visit.
All right, here we go. Overdrive is off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Soon to be up on TSN 2 later in the hour. Brian Hayes, Jonas Siegel of The Athletic in here, and Frankie Corrado. We're all in studio.
What's up, boys?
Look at us in here.
Yeah.
How about that?
Friday? We're not mailing it in, though.
No, we're not. And to be fair to Owen Noodles, they're not either. Noodles is calling a game. Ottawa's in Anaheim. Ottawa's winning 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
Positive vibes only. See that, DJ Smith, their head coach? What else is he going to say publicly?
Exactly. What are you going to say, man? Like, you can't pile on to your team any more than they've piled on to themselves at this point. They can't win a game. They puke away every game some way, somehow.
They cannot win.
Despite the fact that they're playing good portions of hockey within there, they cannot win a game.
Right, and DJ said, we're focusing on the positives. You know, I'm paraphrasing here, but what else is he going to say? Like, what is he going to say?
The season's over.
We're panicking. We're screwed. Yeah. I can't believe I still have a job. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, is Pierre Dorion asleep? Is he awake? Is he following things?
He's loyal, Hayes.
Dorion is very loyal.
Very loyal.
And I like DJ Smith as a coach, as a guy who's been on the show a lot. And I don't think it's a scenario where you look at it and say it's the coach at all. But when you, every year it's the same thing. Rebuild's over. We're going to take a big step. Like,
isn't
their season's effectively
management?
Over. Well, I think management's a big part of it. My point being is, you would think it's some... I'm sure the fans in Ottawa are like, do something. A trade. Call someone up. Maybe if you have to fire a coach or a GM or an assistant
they
GM.
They put guys on waivers.
Something.
Is in the minors.
That's not going to cut it.
No,
that's not going to cut it. No.
Right.
But
that's the least you could possibly do.
Right.
Absolute least.
I think the ownership, kind of the transition they're in right now, probably factors into everything Ottawa's doing. But anyway, you know, the Sens, they're up 2-0 right now on Anaheim. The only team in the league worse than them.
There you
go. In the standings.
Very winnable game.
and Noodles is, of course, calling that. And O's calling, or he's on the panel for the Leaf game. And the Leaf game... well into the third period, so we'll be tracking that. We'll be getting into it. We're going to have two guys on the show today who are in the building. Mike Johnson. Johnny will join us in about an hour, and Wes Waltz is coming up. He's in the building right now in Minnesota.
It's pretty interesting. It's not all the time you get a post-game hit from the guy who did the color for the Leafs, and then you get, like, I don't know when that ever happens on this show.
Doesn't happen very often.
Live
they never play. They never play weekday games.
No.
You know, they even this is a rarity. I don't remember them on the Friday after Thanksgiving playing a lot in the afternoon.
This
Jonas.
Has got to be new. I don't remember this ever when I was. And I wasn't like I was there fairly recently. I don't remember this ever happened.
They do the kids game at home.
Yeah,
and they've done that for a few years.
The next gen
game, which they're doing this year again, I believe.
Didn't
are they not
do it already?
Did they already have it? Maybe they did.
So.
I don't know. I can't remember if they did.
They might do a couple of those a year. I don't think that's just one game. They do
No, I don't think they're willing to waste. Quote, not waste is the wrong way of phrasing it, but like ticket holders want prime time in the TV networks.
They
don't want too many 2 o'clock games on a Friday or a Tuesday.
I have it in the vault somewhere back there that they did two of those games in 1 year once.
I don't remember that.
We got to get the grappler to fact check that.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get someone on the case there. But, you don't see the Leafs play during the day too often.
I was asking Frankie, like, if as a player you liked it, and he said, yeah.
Loved it.
I could see why.
Loved it. Think about it. You get up, you have your nice big breakfast or whatever, you hang out for a little bit, and you're at the rink and you're playing the game. There's no waiting around. Like, a game day is so ritual-based because you got to get up, you got to go have breakfast, then you go morning skate, then you're back at the hotel, then there's pregame meal. Like, all these things, and you do about a million wardrobe changes. Hockey players do more wardrobe changes than anyone on Broadway in Manhattan. I'm telling you, from the amount of times in a game day you get into a suit, out of a suit, into hockey equipment, out of the hockey equipment, back into the suit, it's ridiculous. This is great. You get up, you go play. Your day is done at 5.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a life after. You can like actually go for dinner.
Well, they have to go to Pittsburgh.
That's the downer here.
The road team.
The road team is not so great necessarily if you're going to a different team. I would totally agree with that if you're the home team. Like, I'm sure you'd love every once in a while to play a Saturday at like 3 o'clock.
Yes.
You're up for dinner at 7:30.
It's great.
Yeah, it'd be great.
But also, if you're the away team now and you got to travel, you don't get in at 2 a.m. Get in at a decent time.
That's why I'm curious who's going to start tomorrow. I assume it's Sjogren. I think it probably should be Sjogren. I wouldn't mess around with Murray on a back-to-back with travel. But Keefe was not fully committed to it because of the uniqueness of an afternoon game, and then you play at night tomorrow night.
I'm surprised they're even considering it.
I don't think they really are.
Just because of the goalie in question, like everything that's happened. He's not practicing all the time. I don't know. What's the upside?
I guess the upside is he loves playing in Pitt, and he dominates when he's in Pittsburgh.
He's made one start.
One start Pitt. In his career. As an opponent. Dominated.
Yeah.
As an opponent.
Yes.
Right? He loves that building, though. He won 2 cups in that building. Yes. Come on.
You're going to risk him getting hurt.
I'm not saying I would do that, Jonas. I fully expect Sjogren. I think I'm with you. I figured they'd come out and say, obviously, Murray tomorrow and Sjogren tomorrow. Why are we even debating anything?
Yes.
Yes, because that's probably the way it should be.
It's not like Sjogren's been a sieve. He's been okay. He can give you a chance to win that game.
He's been just okay.
He's been okay.
He's like, a third-string goalie.
He's a third-string goalie. Yeah. So he can play in a back-to-back, and you don't have to risk Matt Murray getting injured again.
I think, listen, the way the Leafs are rolling and they're racking up points, and if they get to the end of the season and they're in the playoffs, which I think we all expect that they will be, I mean, this will be a character-building type of season with the fact that, like, Victor Mete and Mac Hollowell are playing.
On the same pair.
On the same pair. On the road.
Yeah. I don't know, like, have you noticed them on the ice at the same time very much today?
Oh, that's actually...
So I've been paying attention for that because I was that call-up guy who was in that situation very often, Jonas.
Yeah, but you're not 5'9", 170.
No, but I might have played like it at times. But so they're doing the first pair, the second pair. Then someone on the first or second pair will take one of those third pair guys, and then it'll go back up, and then someone on the first or second pair will take the other guy. So they're not getting out there very often. There's a lot of trickery that's happening behind the bench right now.
It's like they have 2.5 pairings, basically.
Apparently,
I think that that's wise. I mean, Minnesota's a good team. They're a big team. So anyway, we're tracking now. We'll get into that throughout the afternoon. We just heard on this station, England and the U.S. tied 0-0, which I think is a big result for the Americans because now they got 2 points in the bank.
Yeah.
And they have Iran left. And if they beat them, which they would be expected to do, they'll get through 100%.
They just won, right?
Yeah, Iran won.
Iran beat Wales. Yes. Yeah. Like the Welsh are in big, big trouble. They only have a point now.
You know why? Is that our boy Gareth Bale?
That's
Too
Gareth
much simulator?
Bale. That's Gareth Bale. He
Is
didn't.
That the excuse we're going to get now?
I think it's possible. I mean, you get skunked by Iran, a team you're definitely supposed to beat. And it's not like Wales is Brazil or, you know, Spain or like one of the powerhouse teams, but they're a quality side. And it was pretty shocking. Like these 5 a.m. games, I wake up all the time. It was the same thing with Argentina, Saudi Arabia. They played at 5 a.m. Eastern. You wake up, and I was like shocked. More so with Argentina losing than with Wales losing, but I fully expected Wales was going to at least draw Iran. That did not end up happening.
Well, especially if Iran had a brutal first game.
Awful. They got, like, the English smoked them.
Yeah.
Like England beat them 6-2. It wasn't even close. But yeah, you know, a 0-0 draw. There's been a lot of those. There's been a lot of 0-0 draws. Yet I think would the majority of our country take 0-0 on Sunday against Croatia?
Do we need to win?
You don't statistically need to win.
You want to win.
You definitely would like to win.
But you'll take a draw against Croatia. Think about the expectations for that team coming into this tournament. Like, you played Belgium really, really well. It's unfortunate you didn't get the win. But if you get a draw against Croatia, like, that's building block material for a nation that hasn't been there in 36 years. That's a pretty big deal.
Those were the two teams. Those are the powerhouses, right? Now, you don't want to look past Morocco. Morocco's a good team. They just tied Croatia in their first match. But I think you take a tie right now, and then you hope either Belgium runs the table, so then you can get through if you beat Morocco, or, you know, you're going to have to win one of the next two, for sure. Like, that's certain. You have to get to 4 points. I think that goes without saying. So whether it's Croatia, Morocco, whatever, you can make it a lot easier if you beat Croatia, beat Morocco, you're through. Then you're not going to have to worry about it if you're Canada.
The biggest thing, they need to score a goal.
They
need to score a goal in the first half of this next game. Because you could see, watching that game against Belgium, it's a lot of nervous energy in and around the box. Guys aren't really like trying to finish with conviction. You know, it's a lot of hoping it goes in.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need a goal early. Like, you had the golden ticket.
That was it right there. That's like, I keep thinking about that penalty by Davies. Like,
10 minutes in, and you're going to break this, you know, this streak of never scoring a goal. Oh, man.
You score that goal, immediately that storyline is dead.
Yeah.
It's dead. Like, that chapter's written. You can put it in the record books. Davies has got it. You take your first lead at the World Cup. Who knows how the rest of the game plays out if they're up 1-0? Like maybe Belgium plays differently, and who knows what the final result is. But you likely get a draw,
yeah.
And then you're feeling so different.
Isn't it just sports, though, when you have all the momentum? Like, we've all watched a lot of sports. Momentum, momentum, momentum. Don't capitalize. Other team comes back and capitalizes.
It was like, so deflating. Yeah, it always felt that way. Like, you dominated the first half. The manager of Mexico, who I think was being genuine, I don't think this was tongue-in-cheek, I don't think it was a backhanded shot at Canada, was asked, because they have the test of playing Argentina tomorrow. That is not going to be fun or easy. Like, Argentina, it's a must-win, effectively, for Argentina, or real close to it. And you would expect they have a way better effort. But he said the best team he's seen play so far is Canada. And the first half they played was absolutely a clinic. And he was drawing on that to say, if Canada can do that against the number two team in the world, why can't we do it against Argentina, top five team in the world? So, I mean, people noticed.
Canada,
people are aware of what Canada did. But in the end, they have 0 points and Belgium's got three.
Listen, Canada did not sit back and wait for anything in that game. They were very, very aggressive, to the point where if one of the Belgian players sent like a long ball, it was almost going to be like a 2-on-1 or like a 3-on-2, like similar to hockey, where it was like quick break transition. And Canada, everyone would get back, and then they would try and go back on the attack. And they kind of just had this posture over Belgium where it was, like, very aggressive, especially up the field. I like it. I feel like if you're going to go down and you're Canada, go down guns a-blazing.
I agree.
Like, why are you going to sit back and wait for these teams to kind of pick you apart? Go get it.
Well, that's their style of play that's most effective. Like, that's what everyone's aware of. Their pace, specifically up front, their ability to attack. And that's what they did all through CONCACAF, and it was very successful. As a result, when you are so overly aggressive, the counterattack can burn you. That's what happened, obviously, at the end of the first half. But everyone's seen the tabloids over in Croatia. I didn't know there were tabloids in Croatia.
They're everywhere.
I guess there's tabloids everywhere.
Dude, we had them in Sweden. We would see it all the time, Swedish tabloids.
The tabloids. Yeah. I guess every single country has a tabloid.
I'm surprised that that's surprising to you.
I don't know. I guess it just never dawned on me, the idea of like the Croatian, us like Canadians being in the crosshairs of the Croatian tabloids.
That
like,
is
it just never dawned on me that this would ever be a reality.
Yeah.
And obviously they posted the picture of John Herdman, and I mean, that's a pretty
it's a tough pick
because it's basically, they're saying, you know, you're talking a big game, but can you walk the big game? Even though Herdman's not going to be on the pitch playing.
No kidding.
You know, like, he is. I don't know if this was intentional, and I would, if I had to put money on it, I would say it wasn't. I think he was in the moment. He was emotional. He was proud of his team. He got asked a question, and he blurted out
100%.
Something he said that was private, and then all of a sudden it's public, and he's got to own it. But now he has put up a shield for his team. He has become, not that they necessarily needed it. Again, they didn't get blown out against Belgium. They played very well. But no one's discussing the Davies penalty. No one's discussing David having opportunities where he couldn't close. The fact that they lost. The fact that there's a lot of pressure on this team to perform on Sunday. It's all about Herdman up with this guy.
It's just noise around him. I can imagine he was doing that post-game interview, and this guy must have had such an adrenaline rush from that whole game, and he's getting asked all these questions. And it was just genuine. Like, it was just genuine.
That's what he said, like, in the circle. He said that.
That's 100% what it is. Yeah. Maybe you don't tell the media what you told your team exactly. Like, maybe for that one split second, you just hold it back a bit. But it wasn't like this guy's going out running his mouth because his team is so great. You lost to Belgium. You played a great game. There's really no reason for him to be, you know, shooting from the hip. It's just, It was unfortunate the way it happened because he was just fired up. He's fired up and he's being genuine and honest.
Let Croatia deal with that, right? Yeah, I love it that we're with that. A lot of it is, I think, steeped in the fact that Croatia is looking at Canada saying, who do you guys think you are? Which is reasonable. Like, it's difficult for us to see that objectively worldwide. Canada has no footprint on the international stage of soccer.
Did you see Duthie's video? Did you see that, where he interviewed the Croatian fan in Qatar?
No, I didn't see that.
So he's interviewing a Croatian fan, and the guy goes something along the lines of, Croatia is in soccer what Canada is in hockey. And he goes, we expect, basically, Croatia to beat Canada in soccer the way Canada in hockey would beat Croatia.
Well,
that makes sense.
Yes, and I think that is that there is truth in terms of the expectations. There is not truth in the fact that Croatia is the equivalent to soccer, what Canada is to hockey.
That would be Brazil.
That's Brazil. I'm not even sure there is an equivalent. Like, yeah. Canada has been so dominant for so long, where at the World Cup, it could be Brazil, Germany, Spain. It could be any
France.
Number of teams.
France
exactly. But Croatia is a step below those powerhouses.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm sure that is the mentality. They fully expect they're just going to beat Canada. Yeah. But I think they fully expected they were going to beat Morocco, and they didn't do that.
But you don't think like that game maybe changed the dynamic a little bit?
I'm not. How many people in Croatia watched? Like, that's what I'm curious. You know
but
what
I mean?
Mean
the actual team.
Oh, I think the team will be ready.
Like, that's an eye-opener.
I think the team's prepared. And I think the fact that they had a draw in their first match, Croatia realizes the importance of this match. You're going to get a great effort from them. I don't expect anything less. But, you know, the Croatians saying, oh, we're into it. I'm not sure. I'm curious.
This is the
I'd like
great
to find out
about,
where this goes.
About this sport and this tournament, right? Like, we were just talking about powerhouse countries, and the last country to win the Euro is Italy.
Not even in it,
mm-hmm. right? Four World Cups, and we're not even thinking about Italy. And rightfully so. Like, they didn't qualify. They don't deserve to be talked about. But that just goes to show you, Canada comes into this tournament as a relative unknown, supreme underdog. And they can actually make noise. Like, they can actually, and it would be justified, and it would be well deserved. Like, you can come in here and steal the show. Like,
you got to get a result though now, right?
You like need
because
a goal.
No one is going to remember in 20 years that you played well against Belgium if you lose to Croatia, lose to Morocco, and go home.
Totally.
Right? Like, no one. You got to get a result, whether it's a tie, which in soccer is still significant. A goal, multiple goals, a win, an outright win would clearly be significant. It'll immediately be the most famous and proclaimed men's victory in the history of soccer in our country. The second they get a tie at the World Cup, it's probably the most memorable game. A win, most certainly the most memorable game. But you planted seeds for being disruptive.
Yes.
But you still got to follow through. Right, like you still lost the match, and you're on your back heels now.
I'll tell you what,
you got to get going here on Sunday.
If Canada beats Croatia, I'm going to text Joe from the bridge, and we're going to drive around Woodbridge Avenue, Rutherford, Western Road. We're going to honk our horn like crazy.
I want to hear horns in this city.
In his Mustang, too,
yes.
With a Canada flag.
I'm
dragging him with me, and he's going to drive.
It's got to be an outright victory.
Victory.
Yes,
me and Joe
victory.
From the bridge. Video evidence, we go honking our horn in Woodbridge everywhere.
Okay. Jonas, what are you going to do if Canada wins? You got to supply something similar.
Should I get into my car and honk?
Come up to the bridge.
I got to tell you, though, I was naive, but we went out to watch the game on whatever day it was. What was it? What day was it?
Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
Wednesday. The bars were rammed.
Mm-hmm.
I was not expecting that. Like, people were more into this than I thought they were going to be. Like, I thought maybe if like they got a little further, like, it would be noisy, but right away.
Oh, I think the fact that it was a 2 o'clock game, the first game, Sunday, I think there'll be a lot of life because it's a Sunday. It's next Thursday. It's either a 10 or 11 a.m. kickoff. We'll see what they're made of, you know, Canadians across the country. But I expect a ton of support. I don't think it's going to stop.
Think about this. Like, I know because I live in Woodbridge. I grew up there. Not everyone who goes and watches Italy at the Euro and the World Cup knows about the ongoings of Italian Serie A soccer. So you don't need to be like this hardcore fan to get behind a team and support them. Right?
I don't know anything.
Same. I don't know much. I only know basic stuff. But
yes.
I'll be honking my horn because they deserve it. And they're a good team. They're a good team and they deserve some support.
Absolutely. They're Canadian. Right? They're over there. They're representing us. So this, no one has to explain jumping on the bandwagon.
Did you ever think you would see a Canadian team at the World Cup?
It was. There's been a couple of things that have happened over the last 5 years.
A couple things.
Well, I mean, COVID, obviously, I didn't see coming. If you want to get deeper in terms of, like, viruses breaking out in, like, pandemics, yeah, I can't say I necessarily saw that in my crystal ball. But in terms of sports in this country, one, if you had have told me in 2006 the Raptors would ever win an NBA championship, I'd say you're insane. You've lost your mind, and you have no idea what you're talking about. And many years in between 06 and 19, I probably would have had a similar vibe. Just because of, you know, the reputation league-wide, the exodus of the stars, you know, the turnover at the top.
It was bleak for a long time.
There was a lot of bleak, dark days, and it just, the Raptors felt more like an outlier in the NBA than I would say the Jays did in Major League Baseball. It felt like it was a steeper climb. And when they won that, it was a shock to the system. Like, it was such an incredible accomplishment. And this would probably be number two on the list because they were in the World Cup in 86. I don't remember that. All through the 90s, early 2000s, it wasn't even thought of.
Yeah,
like,
I never
it was like a punchline. Like, there's no way they have a shot. They're going to get crushed.
If they were on TV, it was like they were losing to Panama or Honduras.
Right, they were just getting crushed.
It wasn't even
close. There were 15 people in the stadium. Yeah. No one was paying attention. They were so off the radar on the men's side. And so I guess to answer your question, again, you asked me 10 years ago, I'd say, no, they're not getting... How are they getting to the World Cup
Same.
In 2022? No chance.
I remember sitting around watching World Cup
there.
In like 2006 when Italy won. And like we're thinking Canada will never be in this tournament. And look at them now.
Yeah.
Look at them now. They're outplaying Belgium.
They're there.
And we're talking about they have a chance to beat Croatia.
And they deserve to be there because they won CONCACAF. Like you look at Qatar, who is hosting, they're already out.
Yeah.
And I don't know when we'll ever see Qatar again. Like, when is Qatar going to get back to our World Cup? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But they were in, they hosted, they had their two matches. They'll get a third. Thanks for coming out. Pack your bags. You're leaving. Canada's there on merit. They played themselves in, which I think in 2026, when I believe they'll get a pass for being one of the co-hosts, I'm not sure they would need it anyway. I think they'll play their way into it.
Yeah.
And especially with the expansion of, they're going from 32 to 48, I think they'd be there anyway in 2026.
It's conceivable they'll be even a much better program.
Oh, I think there's reason to believe that that's definitely going to be the case, for sure. All right, Frankie Corrado, Jonas Siegel in here. I'm Brian Hayes. We're tracking the Leafs. They're up 4-2 right now.
Minus, like, all their D and, like...
Yeah, I got to give them credit, man.
I'm nuts.
We're going to talk a lot about that. Mike Johnson coming up just after 5. Wes Waltz later in the afternoon as well. Al's brother is in the building. He and Luke Wilson will be showing up a little bit later on to make some picks. We'll get into the games from yesterday. Marcellus Wiley will join us. The head coach of the Vikings, we have some audio and some video. We'll play it. He thought he was pumping the tires of his quarterback. I think he did the complete opposite. We'll play it. We'll go around the table, and we'll see how you guys respond to it. We'll see what Marcellus has to say about it, too. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN app. All right, so the three Thanksgiving games, they're actually really good games.
Yeah.
Really good games, like suspenseful, close games. The Bills end up winning. Dallas wins. The Giants with the most meaningless, useless, stupid cover in the history of football.
Did that jam you?
Well, it did with these morons.
Yeah.
Like, it was, for starters, the kick Mark misses a 46er in a dome on primetime, wide right. Cut him immediately.
Instantly.
Because that would have pushed it to, it's over. You can't cover the number.
Yeah.
And then Brian Daboll, for some reason, it's like, we got to score a touchdown with 8 seconds left. Waste everyone's time. Anyway, Dallas wins, the Giants cover.
I got something going on now where a buddy of mine is like this Josh Allen hater, and he likes to text me when things aren't going so well for Josh Allen and be like, I've been watching this guy for years. I knew about this. He gets intercepted, this and that. And he's texting me throughout the game, Buffalo-Detroit. Gets to the fourth quarter. And we saw what Josh Allen did with that last drive.
Mm-hmm.
Crickets.
Awfully quiet.
Absolute
That's the way it always is.
Crickets. And then he throws a 40-yard rope right on the numbers to Diggs, I believe. Crickets. And then I just sent him the dot, dot, dot. I said, anything to say? He goes, nothing.
To be fair.
Ghosted.
If Detroit had managed things a little bit better, they wouldn't have had that chance. Bad teams just seem to like
That's
do
what
bad
happens.
Team stuff.
Bad teams do bad
what
stuff.
What are you doing?
Bad teams do bad stuff.
They hate the clock. They hate managing the clock.
Right.
It's like if we're sitting on the couch being like, yeah, you probably don't want to leave them much time. Why don't they know?
Well, you would think they would, Jonas. They get paid a lot of money, and apparently all they do is sit there at the stadium all week and coach, but they never contemplate actually working out, you know, the clock. But anyway, the night game was Minnesota New England. What stood out to me was the Patriots were very undisciplined. They played like a bad team. That's a Bill Belichick team, man. Like that roughing the kicker penalty is so – I thought he was going to kill that guy on the sideline. And that ended the game. Like the Vikings went down. They put in seven. And Kirk Cousins played well. Full credit to Kirk Cousins. He played very well. Kevin O'Connell, a rookie coach. There was video in the room after the game because Cousins has a reputation of being a guy who's awful on primetime. Like his, he can't win on primetime. He throws picks. He fumbles the ball. He's terrible. He played really well. They won on primetime. This is the post-game speech in the Vikings locker room.
Last time I checked, that game started at 7:25. That makes it a primetime football game. Your quarterback went 30 of 37 for 299.
If I'm Kirk Cousins, I'm so angry with that.
Yeah?
Why?
Because he's just, the elephant in the room is this guy's terrible in primetime, and his coach is like, I know you've been terrible, but finally you had a game. Let's pump your tires. The guy's been in the league for a decade.
I think he's probably saying the hype around that is not true.
Oh, it's completely true. No, it's completely true.
You like that?
All right, let's bring in our TSN NFL analyst, longtime NFLer, and of course he's got a great podcast out, More To It podcast, our buddy Marcellus Wiley. Do you think Kirk Cousins would be happy with that, the primetime comment postgame?
I wouldn't take that comment too seriously if I'm Kirk Cousins. So I'm not happy or I'm not mad for this reason. It is reality-based, whether you could say it's the greatest coincidence that's ever happened in sports history of Kirk Cousins having his failures in prime time, despite a success here or there, like last night, he performed well. We also saw him beat New Orleans, obviously, in a playoff game, and call that what you want, but that's as prime as the time can get. But at the same time, you're looking at coach like, dude, this was in a losing effort. So, you know, as we're winning this game and you're pumping this up, we have bigger fish to fry than just this one game. So I don't know why coach is making such an example of this. I would just be indifferent, almost apathy. Like, all right, coach needs something to talk about. This is an elephant in the room. This is a monkey on our back in terms of what our hopes are going forward. So I don't take it either way. I'm just Kirk Cousins like, all right, move on, man. Let's pop a baby bottle of champagne.
At 9-2, with the way the Vikings are playing, I know their schedule maybe going forward may be a little easy, but like, are you bought into what's going on there in Minnesota?
It's hard for me to do that. You know, I'm a guy who bought into a team that was 14-2, San Diego Chargers, and they didn't win it all. I'm a guy who bought into a team that was 16-0, and they didn't win it all. So you look at a team that wins most games by the skin of their teeth, you're like, I don't know about this team. I don't know about how they're going to finish the deal. So a lot's up in the air. There are some obvious teams out there that we all believe in, despite record. It's hard for me to believe in Minnesota, even though they have such a great record.
Bill Belichick has, I think, a deserved reputation as being a guy that's crossing every T, dotting every I. His team is overly disciplined. His team knows every situation. And yet last night, that was not on display, especially in the fourth quarter. There were a lot of silly mistakes, including, you know, you run into the kicker and boom, instead of you getting a ball, the chains are moving, the Vikings stay on the field, they put in six, and the game is effectively over. What do you make of, you know, Belichick's reputation and maybe the way the Patriots actually performed last night?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to win in this league if everything is going your way, let alone if you don't have everything you need. And Bill Belichick is kind of suffering from the latter.
We always think it's about the coach and the jockeys, but it's about the horses. And, you know, New England is a team that may have a little bit above average talent, but they certainly got some question marks in key places. Even at the quarterback position, you can see where there's still a little anxiety in terms of belief in Mac Jones. I think that's what's being highlighted right now. It's like, Belichick, you have proven your greatness, but that was a collective effort. Defense, Tom Brady, et cetera, great personnel. And when you suffer in the roster, you're usually going to suffer in the record. And I think that's what's happening. But Belichick is not, as they say, coaching his best ball either. I would give you that. But I'm just not in the camp to forget his resume, to forget his greatness, and knowing that if he's properly resourced, if he has what he needs, Belichick is obviously the GOAT of all coaches.
With Marcellus Wiley, I don't think there's a bigger swing team in media in terms of talking about them, pumping their tires, and then possibly crushing them on the other side of it as the Dallas Cowboys. And they won very impressively last week in Minnesota. I thought they were impressive, especially in the second half yesterday. Where are you at with the Cowboys, Marcellus, and the likelihood that they could be for real and could legitimately be a Super Bowl team?
Yeah, it's almost like it's a long time coming. Like, you're wrong and you're right about the Dallas Cowboys. It seems like every single week. I write them off at times and I'm wrong, and then I'm like, I'm writing them a ticket to the Super Bowl, and then I'm also wrong. It's just so weird to be right when the Cowboys are rolling, to believe in them and to consistently see them perform up to standard. They got a win yesterday. It wasn't the prettiest of wins, but coming off of that Minnesota victory, everyone was expecting letdown, and we pretty much saw them, especially in the second half, ball out. Dallas is like this weird team where you know it's there, and you're just waiting for it all to come to life. And I think, as we've said several different years, this may be the team that makes it all come to life. They're in a tough division. Everybody's out there fighting and trying to jockey for position all behind the Philadelphia Eagles. But the Cowboys still have an opportunity to go out there and potentially even win this division. Imagine that, and let alone have Super Bowl aspirations. I'm a believer, but I've been the believer so long, holding my breath for so long, you know, you kind of get exhausted just trying to testify for this team.
So, Marcellus, what would be your biggest question about the Cowboys?
So the biggest question mark is truly, like, how are they going to play offensively? It's not because they have a lack of weapons, even though they can get an OBJ in the receiving core and obviously support them there. It's just, how are they going to run the ball and play complementary football and be efficient offensively? Since Dak has come back from injury, they have the highest scoring offense. So you know that they could put the points on the board. But putting points on the board is one thing, especially when you score 40 in one game. It's the efficiency that you need as well. And Dak Prescott had a good game last night, but not a great game. You know, you saw his two interceptions, and you saw have a couple errant throws. That's the problem. It's like, who's going to show up when they need it most, and who can they depend on consistently when they need it most? They put up points. They're fireworks when it doesn't count per se, but when it's all on the line, that's when I want to see this offense shine.
Marcellus, it seems like there's been a few times this season where we're seeing really poor clock management, and the Broncos were notorious for it early in the year. And yesterday we see the Lions kind of pull a stunt where they waste away some of the clock against Buffalo. Like, what is going on there that no one has the attention on the sidelines or the awareness to call a timeout, and you're just killing clock for no reason? Like, what is happening in that situation?
Yeah, man, from my Pop Warner Little League coaching days, as I'm a coach right now, there's a lot of moving parts. And sometimes you see on display, some teams aren't well-oiled machines. They just aren't. Like, everyone drops the ball somehow, some way. And I guess the best way to articulate it is, whenever you see a big play, a touchdown, a 60-yard run, a big ball pass, 50-yard touchdown pass, we immediately think that the player that just made that play is better than the other player. But what I learned from experience of playing and what I learned from coaching is most big plays actually happen from someone else's mistake other than your greatness. So we always think, oh, my God, he's just so much better. It's really like the other guy just dropped the ball. It's just he dropped the discipline and coverage. He was in the wrong gap, et cetera. what happens in plays like this and coaching and time management miscues, it's pretty much the same thing. It's not like the coach is not capable. It's not like he doesn't have a staff and someone on staff is supposed to pay attention. It's just somebody just dropped the ball in that moment. It could have been someone distracted. It could have been a coach who was caught up on something else and thought it was more important in that moment to talk to his player or get the scheme down or make sure the play got in, other than, oh, by the way, I got to look at that play clock right there. So most of the times, man, these miscues are just mental lapses, just mental errors.
The podcast is the More To It podcast. He is one of our favorites, Marcellus Wiley. I know it's a holiday down there, buddy. Thank you for finding time for us. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Take care, brother. We'll be talking again next week.
You got it. Marcellus Wiley joining us live from L.A. And, yeah, we got a lot more in the NFL this weekend. We'll get more into it later this afternoon. Al's brother will be in here. Luke Wilson will join us. We'll look back on the three games yesterday and also, of course, look ahead to the rest of the games on Sunday. But the Leaf game is over. The Leafs hold on, and they win 4-3.
It's a good game.
That's a really gutsy win, man. I honestly, at this point, with their lineup being what it is on defense, and I think even Matt Murray allowing him to kind of get back into the swing of things, like finding a rhythm. He hasn't played much in like 2 years. Any result is a good result. You win, you don't have to explain anything. But against like good teams on the road, like beating the Devils and then going into Minnesota, who have been better recently and are a big team, physical team, that's an impressive win.
Well, and you really add in impressive. The fact, like you're mentioning the D, their best player hasn't been their best player, and yet they're just like rolling along.
Yeah, that's, you're right. Matthews, again, like was not a dominant force today. But Mitch Marner, that's 15 games in a row with a point. John Tavares scored again.
Willie Nylander again.
Nylander again. Like, those three are showing up on the game
sheet. Scoring again. Yarncroc. Like, that's the recipe right now, right? You're getting, I know Matthews hasn't been dominant, but you're getting contributions from Marner, Tavares, Nylander tonight, or in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're getting a depth goal. And you're getting, like, these guys are playing pretty well on the back end.
Oh, they
like,
are.
They're doing enough.
They're holding it together. Like, they really are.
I have a theory. Maybe we'll get into it after the break.
Oh, you have a theory? You
That's
want to
a good tease. Theory.
You're teasing
it.
A
I'm
theory.
Teasing a theory.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I like that. Yes. Let's sit on that because I want to see where this theory is going. Is it about the defense?
It's about the Leafs in general.
Just the way that they're approaching everything.
But probably more catered to the defense.
Okay. So the Leafs end up beating Minnesota 4-3 today. They are 8-1-4 in the last 13. That's an impressive run, man. That is an impressive run. Considering the way they started their year, their first 10 games, much like a year ago, although they were worse against worse competition to start the season. But that's way in the rear view now.
Yeah.
Like that California road trip is so far in the rear view,
Such
it's irrelevant now.
No one's thinking about
Completely
that.
Completely irrelevant because of how well they've played and all of the other things that have popped up, including the injuries, the return of Matt Murray, this point streak for Mitch Marner. So Frankie Corrado's in here, Jonas Siegel from The Athletic. I'm Brian Hayes. We've got a theory we're going to hear and break down. We'll do that next. All right, we have a pair of Leaf tickets to give away. Leafs Kings, December 8th. Every day this week, we have been providing the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. Today, you'll have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Your fifth and final clue. This former Maple Leaf played with all three regular members of Overdrive.
Oh, easy.
There it is. All three of us. So if I'm included, it's...
No-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure this out. 416-870-1050. I played with this guy longer than the other two. Not even close.
Can I give a hint?
Yeah, go ahead.
Which hint should I give?
Well, we just gave five hints all week.
Calgary. That's what I'll say.
Calgary's a good one.
Yeah.
Right, that's Dave Keon's number.
That's a good one.
Probably another one.
I believe he said you were one of the best defensemen in that age group.
Yeah, oh, that's a fact. Although I played forward almost my whole life and then moved to defense.
Is that right?
Towards the end. Yeah,
really?
That's a true story.
Wow.
I have no theory on why that happened.
I have a theory.
Yeah, tell us your theory.
I have a theory.
People are waiting. What's your theory on why the Leafs have been so successful?
The Leafs have been a very healthy team, especially when it comes to their star players. Every once in a while...
Wait.
Listen, Jonas. Listen.
Healthy?
Here's the thing, Jonas.
Prior to this season, they've been a very healthy
team.
Sorry,
I should have let you
Historically,
finish.
They've been a healthy team. Star players have come in and out of the lineup with injuries, but we've never seen this magnitude of players hurt at the exact same time. So, what happens with all the other players? Now, there's a little bit of a sense of ownership for guys lower in the lineup. You feel like You are more involved in this team. There's more riding on your shoulders, so you need to elevate yourself. You can't just look to TJ Brody and Morgan Riley and Jake Muzzin to do everything, and then you just pitch in a little bit and not make mistakes.
Yep.
Now, all these guys, these depth forwards, like Austin Matthews, you just mentioned it, hasn't played his best hockey, hasn't been a problem, because Mitch Marner, John Tavares, Nylander, you're getting depth scoring. It's great. On the back end, the two young guys, Liljegren and Sandin, have no choice. They have no choice but to take ownership in what they're doing. Giordano, Hall, all these guys. So when these absences, yes, they hurt the team, but it provides opportunities for guys to kind of give a little more and expect a little more from themselves. And all these guys have risen to the occasion. They've all taken another step. There's more ownership from players lower in the lineup where there may not have been before.
I think that's probably an accurate theory. It's a good theory because you're right. If Riley and Brody and Muzzin are all available, there may be off nights where one of them, maybe two of them, don't play well. And you're playing well that night. That means you're going to get some more opportunity. But you know Sheldon Keefe doesn't trust that night in, night out. Right now, Keefe doesn't have a choice.
Yeah.
He's got to play you. And if you have to be played, then to your point, you're showing up to the rink. If you're Sandin, you're thinking, I'm playing 20 minutes tonight.
I'm a big part of this team.
You almost played 22 minutes tonight.
How about Justin Hall? Like, we were talking about him earlier in the year. Should he be in the lineup?
Yes. He played almost 24 minutes tonight. Yeah. I'll bet you he had a bunch of block shots. Yeah, exactly.
He deserves some flowers
right now. He's playing way better. And you know what he's done? I understand the philosophy and I understand the thought process in terms of how you want to play the game. Keefe, Dubas, et cetera, they believe in puck possession, puck movement, making a play. Mm-hmm. It almost burned them at the end of the game. You'll see it because Sandin had an opportunity to basically go high and hard, get it out. Steady made a play. Liljegren fumbled it. Tic-tac-toe. Zuccarello almost scored to tie the game with 10 seconds left. Matt Murray made an unbelievable save, like post to post, unbelievable save. But that's the philosophy of the Leafs. Make a play. And as a result, I think some of these guys took it too far.
Right.
And I think Justin Hall's a great example. He took it too far, trying to make plays. And I'm curious if he made the distinction or if Keefe made the distinction and said, simplify. Like, you can't keep trying to make plays you can't make. Because not everyone can make them.
That's always when.
Sometimes make it simple, block shots. Throw 100%. Your body around a little bit. Get off the ice. That's a win. There's nothing wrong with
100%.
That. 100%.
Anytime things aren't going well, you can bet there's a coach kind of lurking around with the laptop, and he's going to show you some clips, and he's going to say, we need you to keep it simple. Yeah. And then as you start building your confidence, maybe you can start adding stuff in as you go here. But that's like the default. It always comes back to, can you keep it a little more simple right now for us?
Mm-hmm. But you know what's weird? Can I offer my own theory?
Yes.
How about we should theories. Do theories?
Theories.
All right, I got a theory. I'll drop at 5.
You know what's weird is, like, you look at their roster, and there's not they've had this impressive stretch. How many guys would you say are having great years? It's not like a lot of guys. Like, you'd say Tavares.
Marner.
You'd say Marner, sort of.
But he's doing what you would expect he would do. Yeah. Now, like, 15 games in a row with a point.
I think Nylander's having a great year.
But Willie had a great year last year.
Yeah, but, like, who else? Like, Giordano has had a good year.
Sure. I think Kampf has been good.
Yeah. He's been fine. He's been, like, he's not been, like,
not like statistically.
He's not been better than.
No, but you're right. Yeah.
It's just like you look at their roster and like, who's having like this amazing year, and that's a good team. To your point,
yes.
That's my theory.
If anything, what sticks out is the guy not having a great year, and it's Matthews. Yeah. Like, relatively speaking, he's not on pace for 115 points and 65 goals.
It's good. It's not his standards. We're still waiting for the games where Matthews is dancing and you can't touch the guy,
which will come, which is again what makes this such an impressive run. They're 8-1-4 in the last 13 with guys like Mete and Hollowell playing, and you know, you got
Sandin and Liljegren are playing top four.
They're playing 24 minutes.
There's no hiding
from it. Giordano's 39. He's playing 23 minutes today. Matthews is not on his A game.
Yeah.
And yet they're going into Jersey and ending a streak. They're going into Minnesota. They're playing good teams, and they're finding results. And defensively, they're playing very strong.
Yeah.
Like, that's what stuck out here. And maybe that's something going on with Matthews. You know, maybe it is. You know, defensively, it's not like he's a weak link defensively.
Absolutely.
But he's not been as good defensively as he was last year. So there's that, too.
One's a difficult one to figure out. Yeah. What's up with Austin?
There's a theory. I don't have it though.
It would be a lot louder of a conversation if they were like 4-8-1.
Yeah.
but they're not.
Yeah.
Right? They're winning a lot of hockey games, so everything quiets
playing
down.
Playing great. Playing,
playing
great
really
hockey.
Well. It's an impressive win. More on that in the next hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.